Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Tuesday afternoon. Joining us from New York City, I believe he's going to a 76ers Knicks game tonight, is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, fellas. Yes, a 76ers Knicks game where I think we're going to see some players come back and actually play, and Tyrese Maxey and OG Anunoby. So that will be fun.
Yeah, the Knicks have been waiting for that for a while, and obviously the Sixers need all the help they can get. Joining us from Dallas, Texas, where sadly he witnessed the end of history, Luka Doncic's 35-game triple-double streak came to a tragic end on, what was it, Monday night or was it Sunday night? I can't remember. McMahon.
Howdy, partners. I witnessed it while sitting on my couch because that game was played in Chicago and I did not make the trip. But boy, oh boy, I tell you, it was, look, 35-game streak, poof. 30-game streak, despite his best efforts midway through the fourth quarter of a blowout, poof. The 20-game triple-double streak, though, tying a record, seven straight. Luka, Oscar Robertson, Michael Jordan, that thing's still alive. And you might say, most importantly, depending on who you ask, the Mavericks' winning streak alive at three games.
Well, Jason Kidd said after the game that Luka would never stat chase. And I'm sure that is 100%.
I will say that. I sent you guys a little snippet from the AP story, and I went back and I did watch the press conference. There was acknowledgement that the last couple of games in blowout wins, there was a little bit of stat chasing, such as grabbing the 10th rebound in Detroit with 3:14 remaining and then calling a timeout to exit the game. And obviously flinging up a few threes in the last couple minutes that he played in a blowout midway through the fourth quarter. Jay Kidd's point was just that maybe Luka doesn't prioritize the stats as much as, I don't know. I don't know what Jay Kidd's point was, because he just admitted they've been stat chasing. I think the greater point is the priority is winning. And if you can hunt some historical stats in the process, so be it.
Got it. Well, here's the thing. Like, Jason Kidd, in his role, no matter what he thinks, has to come out and say, great job, Luka. Because if he comes out and says anything else, it's
a headline.
Not smart. Yeah. Well, so, yeah. You know.
And also, Jay Kidd is the coach. And so, ultimately, if he says, hey, we got to watch your minutes, we got to prioritize rest over hunting some stats in a blowout, you're going to come out. And Jay Kidd said they reached a mutual decision midway through the fourth quarter that, quote, enough was enough. But
I would have liked to have heard those negotiations before the mutual decision was reached.
Well, listen, he'd have gotten 30 if that ref would have called the foul that Luka wanted.
Aha. Uh-huh. That's where we're really at. That's where Luka's position.
Shock of all shocks.
Yeah.
But hey, okay. It is a hell of a run. I don't, you know, whatever. You
oh, mean, yeah. I mean, that's not to cheapen it. Like, it's awesome. It's awesome. But yeah, it's so you want it to be a legitimate streak. You don't want to be manufacturing it. So, all right. So we are here in the last quarter of the season, and this is the first year, obviously, that the 65-game rule is in effect for some of these awards. And it's more than just awards. It's, in some cases, whether you make all NBA. And of course, while MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, and all that stuff is historic, and it goes to Hall of Fame resumes, and it's something people talk about literally for decades, the more tangible thing to teams in the short run is whether a guy makes all NBA and whether he's going to get a bunch more money, 30, 40, 50, 70 million, depending on the nature of the contract. And that affects whether guys will re-sign. It affects what teams can do with the luxury tax, affects a lot of things. And so that number is very important, not just necessarily in who qualifies, but if you get disqualified, you then make space for somebody else. The 15 best players in the league are not going to be all NBA this year because we've already had several guys get disqualified. And so with this last stretch of games, most teams have between 16 and 19-ish games left. Maybe it's a little less than, maybe like 15 to 18 games left. I thought we'd just go over some of the guys who have things to play for and to keep an eye on coming down the stretch. All right, so real quick, we know Joel Embiid is ineligible. He has missed too many games, even though he's hopefully coming back soon. Is there any feel by that on Bontemps? Any feel on Embiid at all, if he's getting anywhere close?
I mean, he's been doing some work. He's worked out some. He's obviously made progress, but there's no indication at all of any sort of timeline for a return, him returning to practice or anything as of Tuesday afternoon.
Okay.
I would say optimism remains he'll be back, but unclear of when.
Okay. Donovan Mitchell missed the game on Monday for the Cavs against the Suns. He is now ineligible for All-NBA, so he won't make it. Those are two All-NBA guys who won't make it. Another guy who is become ineligible within the last week is Jamal Murray. Now, I don't know if Jamal Murray would have made all NBA.
He's not quite ineligible yet, I don't believe. I was just looking at this before. I think he's missed 16 games as of now.
I'm seeing that the most he can play in is 64.
Well, they've played 65 games, and he's got 49 games played. So I'm not sure why.
I think there's the thing where you got to play, I forget the exact number, X amount of minutes. I think there was an early exit.
Well, maybe, but still, even if he plays in every game left, it's 66. So he'd still be over the
number. I am basing on Bobby Marks' information, and I do not think he's going to be eligible.
He's pink on the Bobby Marks chart.
I would guess he is going to end up short just because he's not going to play in back-to-backs and stuff. I was just going through the raw numbers.
Well, look, I don't know if he would have made All-NBA, but if he made All-NBA, he would have been super max eligible, which is why he didn't sign his extension with the Nuggets last summer.
I don't think he would. Regardless, he is playing at an All-NBA level since the All-Star break, by the way, and he did during the playoff run last year, but this is a full-season award. I don't think he's going to be eligible. I don't think he'd have made it anyway.
Right. So that's relevant. And so, you know, that's Kyrie Irving. He's been all NBA level for a couple of weeks at a time, but So Kyrie is not going to get qualified. The max he can play is like in the high 50s.
Yeah. He's way under. Jimmy Butler, way under.
So yeah, Jimmy Butler is also not going to make it. I don't know about way under, but Jimmy Butler has also been disqualified. So the point I'm trying to make here is there's a number of guard level players, and I know it's positionless, and we'll talk about that in a second, but that opens it up for some guards. And so specifically, there's some guards we want to talk about. So Trae Young is also, by the way, he's eligible at the moment, but he's going to be out for the season.
Yeah,
he was another guy who could have made all NBA. I don't know if he was playing all NBA level, but we don't know how he would have finished the season, and some other guys are getting disqualified. And so I don't know. He would have gotten super max eligible by making the All-NBA team, and certainly would have put the Hawks in an interesting position, because this is one of those situations where I'm not sure that you want to give him the super max. I'm not sure if he's a $300 million player. You can debate that. If you're a Trae Young fan, you can certainly disagree with me. I think it's debatable at best.
Well, and the flip side, though, is if he's not super max eligible, it makes it a lot more logical for him if he decides maybe it's time to look elsewhere, to kind of look to turn that page.
Well, there's a number of different ways to look at it. So like if he had become super, let's say he made all NBA and he was super max eligible and he was, you know, among the league leaders in assists, and he was playing pretty well, sort of the middle part of the season. He started off the season in a shooting slump. Atlanta was underperforming as a team. They're really super banged up as a team. By the way, very unfortunate news for Sadiq Bey, who tore his ACL over the weekend, not only because he has this injury that's going to wipe out a big part of next season, is that he was a restricted free agent, or is going to be a restricted free agent this summer, negotiated with the Hawks last fall, didn't come to terms on an extension, and now is heading, you know, we've seen this happen a number of times over the years. We'll see what happens there, but obviously it's disappointing. But anyway, if Trae Young had qualified for all NBA and qualified for the Supermax, it kind of creates a stress point for the organization, stress max time. If they don't offer the Supermax, then Trae Young's like, what are we doing here? I've qualified for it. How can you not give it to me? If they give him the Supermax, then he's locked in and there's no question about his future, but it creates this stress point. Now, since he's not going to be there, it's possible that you won't have that. He will get offered an extension, or at least is in position to be offered an extension, but it would make sense if he didn't sign it, because he would say, right, well, I'm going to try to make all NBA next year. So in a way, this injury removes that potential stress point. Doesn't necessarily mean that he will remain there, because I do think that he or DeJounte Murray, I'm not sure they're going to stick together long term, but that is an interesting dynamic. So he is out of it as well. So a lot of guards have fallen out. Who benefits from that situation? Well,
one guy who is going to be very close, and if he can stay healthy, can qualify, and that's Devin Booker.
Devin Booker's already signed a Supermax.
Yeah, Devin Booker.
I'm talking about
Devin
Booker, an All-NBA selection.
Devin Booker's another guy that could open up a spot. He is right on the borderline of making it. He's basically got to play every game down the stretch. He's at 51 games played. If he plays every game left, he's at 68. He's obviously had a series of injuries and certainly if he gets banged up again, you would think Phoenix is going to be careful with him going into the playoffs. So, and to your point, McMahon, he's already got the money locked up. So what that more is about is, does he end up with 63 games? If he misses a few more, does that create yet another spot? Because he's a guy who Trae Young might have been an iffy case to be a third team All-NBA guy, or would have been an iffy case to be a third team All-NBA guy. If Devin Booker plays 65, he will be on the squad.
Karl Towns, I don't necessarily know if he would have, you know, made it, but he did make the All-Star team. So
he would have been potentially in play. Julius Randle would have potentially in play. He's going to fall short on games.
I don't know how you guys
mentioned Donovan Mitchell earlier. Donovan Mitchell would have been a guy who made it. He's
I don't know how you feel
games.
About Lauri Markkanen. He's not going to probably have enough games now. The Jazz, we'll talk about in a little bit. The Jazz have sort of withered away, but these are all guys that were, you know, eligible.
Chris Porzingis, another guy who's had a great year, might have been a candidate. He's not going to have enough games.
Right, but Porzingis has already extended. He wasn't eligible anyway.
So you're supermax candidates then, Wendy, the guys who you think could benefit financially from this.
Yes. So there's two guards right out of the gate, Tyrese Haliburton and Anthony Edwards. Now, those guys might have made it on their own without getting this benefit. But the fact that these other guys had, you know, were going to compete with them, both of them signed for 5 years, $205 million. If they make all NBA, it triggers the supermax that they already had signed, the Rose provision, it's known after Derrick Rose, who was the first to do this. They get a $40 million bump. It's worth $40 million to them. Their salary, their contracts go from 205 to 245. And,
which is why Tyrese Haliburton was limping around through games for a while earlier this year on a hamstring to make sure he stayed eligible for that.
His minutes restriction was just above the
Above 20 minutes to make sure he played enough minutes to get it.
Haliburton can miss four games and still get it,
which he's basically been at for 6 weeks. And it's not a coincidence.
With $40 million at stake, I say, short of there being a devastating injury, I say he's making that.
To be clear, I'm not saying that as a critical thing. I mean, he's even talked about it pretty openly. Like, it's, you know, that was something that was sitting out there as an issue. And it's certainly the other side of this rule that you're going to have guys in that situation saying, look, you can say, oh, these guys make a lot of money. $8 million here is a lot of money. Doesn't matter how much money you have. So that's going to be in the back of people's minds for sure.
Well, and look, the Pacers, it's not like they're just playing out the string. I mean, they're sitting there in the 7th seed right now, only a game and a half out of the 4 seed. So, you know, he's got a lot to play for team wise and obviously financially. To me, Haliburton and Edwards, they're both all NBA guys. We can throw everybody into the eligibility. Those guys have had all NBA seasons.
I think Ant would have maybe been a guy who there was some debate about if everybody was healthy in the back end. But certainly with the injuries that have happened, I'm with you. I don't really see any way he wouldn't make it now. Haliburton was, I think, going to be a top five. He was going to be a first or second team guy, I think, for sure. So he, I think, was making it one way or the other. And it probably was. But he, I think, is the biggest beneficiary of this whole thing because he's healthy. Well, I mean, obviously, we've joked about him leaving four games.
He's got a lot of wiggle room.
Right. Yeah. We've joked about him repeatedly missing games with, you know, or leaving games and coming back on the pod. But the fact that he is out there all the time, he is, to me, clearly the biggest beneficiary because he's going to walk into an All-NBA team and that money. And if everybody was available, he's probably in that third team discussion and is one of the guys that we're talking about as a borderline candidate.
All right. Well, you think he is the biggest beneficiary depends on what you think about Tyrese Maxey. Maxey has not signed his contract yet, but if he does make all NBA and he's coming back from a concussion tonight at the Garden on Tuesday night, I think he's still got a buffer of like 6 or 7 games he could miss, Bontemps.
Yeah, he's at 55.
Do we think Tyrese Maxey, with all these guys out, do we think has he done enough, or, you know, has the fall off since Embiid, you know, is because he hasn't signed yet, but if he does make all NBA, he can then negotiate for up to the 245 that the other two guys got.
Here's what I'll say about Tyrese Maxey. He is the biggest beneficiary of the rule change, because if you were just going 6 guards, 6 forwards, 3 centers, I think it's pretty hard to have him among the 6 best guards in the league for as well as he's played. And he's been awesome.
Yeah.
But if you're just saying 15 best players, regardless of position, and you start taking away, you know, like you take out Joel Embiid, right? In the past, well, that just means Bam Adebayo or some other center bam, another guy who is, I believe, would get the benefit of the extra money if he gets 65 games.
Well, Bam is a very interesting case, which we'll talk about in a second, but finish your Maxie.
And he might be in some ways be one of the bigger guys who takes the biggest hit from the rule change, because if there's just three centers, you take Embiid out of the picture. It's hard for me to see Bam not getting one of those other two center spots. Now, if you're going again, cross positions, doesn't matter who's being selected or what position you are to be selected. It makes it a little more difficult for a guy like him to make it. I think it makes it easier for Tyrese Maxey to make it, because rather than debating whether he's better than Jalen Brunson or Devin Booker, it's, is he one of the 15 best players? I would probably say no. I really have not sat down and looked at it, because it's obviously so much different than it's been in the past. It's going to be fascinating to figure out how to put these teams together and who to vote for and how it's going to look. But I think he's got a better chance this year than he did otherwise because of the rule change. So I would ultimately say the fact that Philly has struggled so much without Joel Embiid, now they've had a ton of other injuries, to be fair, I think that's probably going to be a pretty significant dent to Tyrese's candidacy to get on that third team All-NBA. Because if they had managed to stay afloat and they were sitting in third in the East right now, say, you'd probably think he's got a really good shot. The fact that they might end up in the play-in and they've really struggled, I think that's going to hurt him a lot.
Yeah, what I was going to say. While Embiid not qualifying opens up a spot, I think it really hurts Maxey's case, because if they are the two or three seed in the East and Maxey's averaging 27-6 and his efficiency would be better with Embiid, you know, then he has a much stronger case than, you know, he's averaging 27-6. His efficiency's dipped some. Like Bontemp said, they're likely going to slip, or could slip into the play-in situation. I think he's going to be one of those receive votes, but doesn't make one of the top three teams.
And he could be a guy, to your point, Brian, where if we have several more guys falling short, he could end up slipping on there. But I think we're probably going to need Devin Booker and some of these other borderline guys to fall away for him to have a serious shot.
Well, let's talk about Adebayo for a second. So I talked to Bam about this when I did a feature on him way back in December.
I also talked to him about it for the 65 game rule story I did a couple months ago.
Well, what did he say then?
He basically said, look, I want to be eligible, but I understand why they put in the rule and it is what it is, which if you've ever dealt with Bam is not exactly a shocking answer from Bam on that.
Right. But Bam wants the money. I mean,
Sure. No, he does. But he wasn't crying poor about the rule. He was like, look, I get what they're trying to do. Would I be thrilled if I don't make it? No, but I get it.
Do you consider Domantas Sabonis a center? He's their starting center.
Yes, he's a center. But again, center doesn't matter in this conversation.
I understand that. But as far as the rule change, I would argue the rule change gives Bam a better shot because, you know, if Sabonis is going to get its center, that makes it hard because I don't think people are voting Bam over Sabonis. So,
I mean, they might. Bam made the All-Star team and Sabonis didn't.
That's
Bam
a fair point.
In the East, Sabonis doesn't.
What'd you say?
Bam plays in the East. Sabonis doesn't.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how that would go. But again, to me, this is where with Joel Embiid out of the picture, I think if you had three centers, most likely it would have been Jokic and then those two guys.
I think you're underestimating the Anthony Davis factor.
Anthony Davis, I forgot about. Right. So yeah. AD would be your second team.
And AD, by the way, has missed three games. He's going to sail to 65 game qualification.
Yeah, and then we'll see the Wolves have slipped a little bit. It looks unlikely that they'll finish top in the West, but you know, Gobert would have been a candidate.
It probably would have come down to Sabonis and Adebayo for the other spot.
Right. So the Heat don't do campaigns for awards.
Part of Heat culture, baby. They write paragraphs in the paint. They ain't campaigning.
Got to keep those salaries down.
Well, it's a huge thing for them. They're dancing on the apron in apron zone. Like I'm sure that if he makes a supermax, I can't see them not giving it to him. But
Bam ain't leaving Miami. I think that's safe to say.
Well, yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, like, it's a $70 million difference. It's $40 million for the, you know, the younger guys on the fun max. For the stress max, it's closer to 70 million.
Well, and by the way, this is why, like we talked about recently, this is why the rule was created, to create these situations where teams would have certainty on whether these guys of this caliber who are making All-NBA and getting the supermax would want to stay. And if they say, you know, we haven't had a guy yet say, I'm not signing it, maybe it will happen at some point. But it also creates, as you said, with Trae Young, sort of the opposite situation where if a team is like, I don't know if we want to do this, it then creates a pivot point in the other direction where what isn't happening is what happened with Kevin Durant and some of these other guys, where the team doesn't really have a way to pay them more than the market until free agency. And so they get to free agency and they make their case, then they lose an elite player for nothing. In all these circumstances, that's why we see so many of these guys get traded now, because the system is built to ensure that guys get traded rather than teams being left holding the bag.
Right. Yeah. So I don't think at this point it looks like we're going to come down to the very last day on anybody, but it could be. Luka has a buffer. I think he could miss like six or seven games, right?
I haven't looked at the exact numbers, but he's been healthy for a while now.
Yeah, he's a 57 game. See, unless he has some serious injury, he's going to be fine. I mean, the main one to watch really is Devin Booker. I mean, he's right on the borderline, and he's a guy who is going to be on an All-NBA team if he makes it. And if he isn't, if he has another hamstring injury or something and falls short, that's a spot that opens up for one of these other guys who's sort of a borderline candidate. And that's really the thing to monitor. I think Tyrese, barring an injury, is going to play enough games. He'll be fine. Anthony's going to be fine. And it comes down to guys like Tyrese Maxey and Bam and some of these other guys who are on the fringes. And do they sneak on because of all these other guys being hurt, or do they not?
By the way, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard both have 10, I think, 9-game buffers. Like, they're hopefully avoiding significant injury. They're going to both qualify. We'll both be strong candidates for All-NBA.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys, LeBron James, another guy. There's a lot of guys in that 8 to 10-game zone of games missed, where if they have some injury, it costs them a couple weeks over the next month, because we still do have a month left.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, then it gets pretty close for a bunch of different guys.
Yeah, I think the Lakers only have 3 back-to-backs left. And so even if LeBron sits out those back-to-backs with that ankle, maintain that ankle, I mean, I don't know if he will. I don't know how it's feeling, because he's sat out some back-to-backs and he's played some back-to-backs. I think it just depends.
He'd still have 5 games even after
yes,
that.
Yes, LeBron's got a pretty fair buffer, and he's going to make All-NBA if he gets it.
And the vast majority of these guys, like, sitting out games, it's not just about looking at the 65-game limit. Like, these guys are scrapping for playoff position or play-in position.
For sure. It doesn't, by the way, it doesn't apply to all awards. It doesn't apply to Rookie of the Year or Most Improved, I don't think.
I think it does for Most Improved, actually.
Really?
I will look up the list of awards. It does not apply. I know it doesn't apply to Rookie of the Year.
It does not apply to Rookie of the Year. I am pretty certain Bontemps double-checked me on this, but I looked it up for obvious reasons, because Alperen Şengün's status for the rest of the season is in jeopardy. Avoided a major injury. There won't be any surgery, but a severely sprained ankle for a team that really doesn't have any hopes of getting in the play.
Well, we're going to talk about that.
Şengün's also an interesting situation, because he's played 63 games, and if you are a game or two under 65 and you have a season-ending injury, there is wiggle room on that. So I think he technically will be eligible regardless.
Yeah, I don't know if he would, because of that. I don't know what his Most Improved Player chances would be, but you can make a case that he is absolutely a legitimate candidate. A guy who, you know, when you look at the Rockets improvement, he's been a huge part of that. A guy who proved that he can be a franchise cornerstone and held up. You know, the question with him was always, can he hold up on the defensive end? Held up well on the defensive end for a team that drastically improved in that area. And then, you know, his scoring average increased from like 14 point something to 21 and change.
Yeah, he's been awesome. Now, just so we have it for clarification's sake, I looked up a story with Bobby from back in, or Bobby's story, I should say, from back in October. MVP, All-NBA, Defensive Player of the Year, All Defensive Teams, Most Improved Player. Mm-hmm. Those are the awards.
So everything but the rookie stuff.
Yep.
Okay.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. All right. Well, we're happy that Şengün didn't suffer some sort of major injury that needs surgery. I do think it's a pretty bad ankle sprain, and I'd be surprised if he comes back, but it's not impossible, I guess. Now, I do want to talk to you about Houston for a second here, McMahon. As we stand right now, Houston is in position. If the season ended right now, they would be tied with Atlanta for the 10th pick. Their pick is top four protected.
Correct.
To Oklahoma City, relic of the Russell Westbrook trade. The difference, they are five games out of the play-in. I don't think that's happening. Quite a few games out of being top four.
Yeah, I mean, there's a 0% chance they can get top four.
Well, that's not true.
I mean, no, I'm talking about in odds. Now, right. They could land with a top four pick. I'm talking about in terms of odds. Right now,
right.
They would have an 11.7% chance of being top four and keeping their pick.
Right.
We'll see how things play out with Atlanta. I think it's going to be difficult for the Rockets to move up in the lottery odds because Utah's not exactly got foot on gas at this point.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second.
Not exactly.
Yeah, and then you know, Brooklyn's just bad, and there's a big gap. By the way, Brooklyn being bad is a great thing for the Rockets.
I was going to say, the Rockets have two chances to get a top four pick because they've got the Nets pick. And by the way, you talk about where the Rockets are in the standings. The Nets right now are eighth in the lottery odds, and it's going to be hard for them to move a lot higher up the list unless they get passed, basically, by Houston and maybe Utah. Yeah.
Well, so, here's what I'm just saying. Like right now, as you said, exactly, they have about 12% chance. If the season ended today, they'd have a 12% chance of their pick going to the top four and not conveying it.
Correct.
But if they move up a few spots, like they are within sight of the eighth spot, which is 26%. If they've got nothing to play for and they're arguably their best player is out for the year, would you not make moves to increase your chances by 15%. 15% is a lot of percentage points.
Here's the thing. I think it's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult for them to do that on a couple of levels. One, you still have a lot of young guys there that you want to play. Jabari Smith, who's played really well this year, you're going to want him to play. They're getting Amen Thompson out there more. You're going to want him to play. You could find a way to just shut down Fred VanVleet for some reason, but you're probably not going to do that.
Jalen Green's actually been playing well lately. Cam Whitmore's as a rookie has had some really good moments.
So you have a lot of young guys who you're trying to play and get minutes and see what they look like. The other thing is you can't really get farther than Brooklyn anyway, realistically. So, and you already have that pick. So you sort of have two of these three spots. And then, as you mentioned, we've also got the Jazz here. Well, the other thing is you've also got the Jazz. Right. The Jazz are going.
Well, let's put the Jazz discussion aside for a second.
But it's relevant here because it's also relevant
to talk about Toronto. Toronto right now is in seventh, and their pick is top six.
But there's a seven-loss gap between the Raptors and the Rockets.
Well,
and the Raptors' best player is out for the season.
I understand that. I'm just saying that Toronto also is incentivized to lose because their pick is top six protected to San Antonio.
But that's what I'm saying here,
for all the talk about how weak this draft is, aside from Houston, which owes its pick to Oklahoma City, top four protected, maybe that we'll see some Tankapalooza down the stretch, maybe not, and certainly won't see it from the Nets because theirs is totally unprotected. They just stink. There's still a lot of tanking going on in the bottom 10.
I understand that. And all I'm just saying is that Houston has 35 losses. Utah has 36 losses. Brooklyn has 39 losses. Brooklyn is not trying to tank. Brooklyn is trying to win. It's a 15% roughly difference between being an 11th and being an 8th. And I would say that if you're in the Rockets organization, you have to have this discussion. I don't know what's going to happen, but you have to have this discussion at this point.
Yeah, I'm sure they're having a discussion on some. I'm sure they're having a discussion on some level. I just think if you're looking at it logically, I think the lowest they're realistically going to get to is ninth.
I think what they can do is bring Dylan Brooks in and say, Dylan, neon green light the rest of the season, baby. Want to see? Well, you want to get 25 shots up? Go for it.
Look, it can be done. If they make it a priority, I think that they can be done.
But what, so, I mean, again, what are you saying can't
they can
be done?
Get to eighth? I'm talking about 15%. A 15% chance of keeping your pick is a significant thing. Okay, these guys are billionaires who operate on margins. Trust me, Tillman Fertitta operates at restaurants where 15% is a really important margin. He knows how to get the 15%. He knows how important it is.
Again, you can just announce that that's the case. They're a significantly better team.
You cannot announce it because when you announce it, that's when you get fined.
There's a discussion to be had here about the size of beers at one of his restaurants, but we're not going to do that.
My point is you can announce, well, yes, they should just do whatever they can to get to eighth. I think unless they are going to sit every one of their young players and Fred and Dylan Brooks for the next month, I think they have an infinitesimal chance of passing the Jazz.
Infinitesimal? That is it.
Because the Jazz are already way outperforming their point differential as it is. And that was before they traded several useful players before Lauri Markkanen has missed time. And
he's got a thigh contusion that's going to take a while to recover, I think.
Well, I thought it was a quad contusion, I think, is technically what they're calling it. But it's going to be very difficult for them to pass them.
Well, okay. So just keep an eye on Houston and see what they do. All right. Now Utah, as we mentioned. Utah's pick is top 10 protected to Oklahoma City. They have made it an unquestioned priority over the last month to keep that pick. And as you said, McMahon, for a draft where we're not seeing a lot of excitement, we got some tanking going on. There could be some more.
Yeah, and I think this is an interesting case because it's top 10. And by the way, this is from the Derek Favors salary dump, which is just like, man, Sam Presti has pulled some moves in the last few years. This is a classic case of
last few decades, bro.
Yeah, this is a classic case of using cap space as a rebuilding team to benefit you down the road.
Like turning Kurt Thomas into a lottery pick.
Top 10 protected this year. If it doesn't convey, it's top 10 protected again next year before going top 8. And so I think this is an interesting discussion. And obviously the Jazz ran all kinds of numbers and discussed all kinds of scenarios. But if this draft is what everybody says it is, in one of the weaker drafts in a while, there's good players in every draft. Last time there was a weak draft, there's Giannis at 15, Gobert at 27, so on and so forth. But you could argue you'd be better off giving up 11 or 12 in this draft and then just moving on where you've got your pick moving forward, as opposed to keeping, you know, we'll see where they land in the lottery. Maybe they get lucky and win the thing. We'll see. But how much better can the Jazz realistically be, especially the West as loaded as it is? And you're going to have Memphis, who's going to be very likely good again next year. I just think it's going to be tough for the Jazz to be a whole lot better off next year when supposedly it's a much stronger draft.
I mean, what do we think? And you've studied them a lot, obviously, McMahon. The fact that they're doing this this year, to me, it signals one of two things. Right. It would either say that A, they think they're going to try to take a significant jump next year and try to get significantly better. Right. So then you're giving up a pick that's, let's just say, 18 instead of 11. Right. Or do we think there's a chance? And this is just me asking a question for the aggregators. I'm not saying anything is happening along these lines. Do we think there's some chance that they're looking at this situation and going, well, we can renegotiate and extend Lauri Markkanen in the summer, but do we want to pay him $45 million a year or treat him like a max player? Or do we want to maybe cash him in, trade him for a bunch of stuff? And to your point, when you look at the West and where Utah is, maybe they're going to be one of the five worst teams in the league the next 2 years when the drafts are incredibly strong with Cameron Boozer being in the draft in 2 years, with Cooper Flagg and these other guys being in the draft next year. And they say, well, we're going to have a top 10 and a top 8 pick the next 2 years, and it's not going to matter because we're going to be bad anyway. And so let's keep our pick all 3 years. Do we think one of those paths is more likely?
You know, the one thing that Danny Ainge, Justin Zanuck, Ryan Smith have been consistent about is they're trying to figure out a way to build a contender as quickly as possible. And clearly they're nowhere near that level. So then you get into the discussion of what's a more realistic path to a contender. And certainly you can make a strong argument that especially in a market like Salt Lake City, where free agency is just not going to be part of the equation, that bottoming out is in your best interest. I don't know exactly which route they're going to take. I'm not sure that they know exactly which route they're going to take. You know, there was a lot of media talk about them listening to Lowry Marketing offers. There certainly wasn't a whole lot of action that I'm aware of on that front.
Right.
So we'll see how things progress. You know, they picked number 9 overall. Taylor Hendricks spent most of the year in the G League. So you're kind of hoping to get a foundation piece there. That's still very much to be determined. They got Keontae George just outside the lottery. He's the closest thing they have to a young core.
Bro, they just signed Kenneth Lofton Jr.
Oh, pancakes.
Well, I mean, look, last year they signed Chris Dunn at this point in the season. And he's become a very useful player.
I'm not saying anything bad. They signed him to a 3-year deal. I'm commenting.
Yeah, and Darius Baisley as well. You know,
another guy that's a decent swing for a team in their position. If one of those guys could become a rotationish kind of guy next year, where they're at, it makes sense. I just think it's interesting the position they've taken by ensuring they keep this pick. It, to me, signals they could go in a couple of different directions.
Yeah.
Where if they were 12th this year and they gave up their pick, to me, that would be sort of a sign of, all right, now we have control of our pick for sure going forward. If we're going to, like, obviously they would be protected either way, but it would be a sign that, all right, we have everything set up. This way, you still, because it's top 10 and top 8 protected, they've still got pretty good flexibility, I think, to either push forward if they want or go the other way and make sure they keep their pick. Because if they do really want to keep their pick the next couple of years, I don't think it'll be that hard.
Also, look, they've drafted pretty well. They have gone out there and looked at this and watched all these players, and actions over words. Their actions say there must be some reason they like trying to get in the top 10 on this draft.
What do you mean they've drafted pretty well?
I think Keontae George is a pretty good draft pick.
Okay. And Taylor Hendricks, who's a number 9 pick.
I'm not judging that yet.
I think
McMahon's point is this front office does not have a very long track record of drafting.
I mean, Zanuck is an extension of the previous regime, so it's kind of like...
Well, Danny Ainge has drafted pretty well in his career. I think it's fair to say that.
I would say he's had some pretty severe ups and downs.
Well, he's been here for 30 years. I would agree with that.
But I mean, in his later stages in Boston, I think he had some pretty significant misses in the middle part of the lottery. That's what I would say.
Now look, he had some huge...
I think most of the guy, the core of that team is Danny Ainge draft picks.
They hit on, obviously Tatum and Brown were phenomenal players. Like, yes, I'm saying those were also top 3 picks.
Right, but there was some choice. There was some work that had to be done there.
I know. But Danny Ainge is really good at his job. I think the jury's out a little bit on him in terms of picking players. If he's picking players in the middle of the first round, which by the way, is the case for a lot of people. It's a grab bag in the middle of the first round.
Well, and there's just like on this roster, there's not very many Jazz draft picks.
Right.
I mean, you know, you go down the roster. There are the 3 from this year. Keontae George has had, he might be a second team all rookie selection. He's had a very encouraging rookie year. Hendricks, who's a project who they hope can become like a supercharged version of a Robert Covington. Sensabaugh hasn't played a whole lot at the NBA level.
And that's it.
That's the Jazz draft picks. I mean, Walker Kessler was a Timberwolves draft pick.
Right, who they got in the trade. Yeah.
Everybody else's trades.
But good evaluation by them to trade for him.
For sure. Yeah. Hey, I mean,
by the way,
they got a really good front office.
But they were going to, I mean.
We're not going to go down the list of Jazz draft picks.
I'm not going to give them too much credit for Walker Kessler, because guess what?
Right.
Whoever the Wolves picked at number 22, they were taken along with 4 other first round picks.
Okay. You're right. Right. Okay. They got Oche Agbaji too, who they've already retraded. So that's a fair point. Okay. So Bontemps, you mentioned that Kurt Thomas trade. I just want to go back real quick and talk about it real quick, because it really is sort of a benchmark trade in NBA history. And it was done in Sam Presti's first year as GM, when he was still the Seattle Sonics. Do you remember the dynamics of that trade?
Yes, the Phoenix Suns, owned by a very cheap person who no longer owns the team, systematically made a series of moves to make their team worse by saving money. And one of them was to trade two future first round picks to the Seattle Supersonics, along with Kurt Thomas, to save a lot of money. And those picks became, I don't remember these specific players, but they both became, if I remember correctly, impact players in the league. I believe one of them was Serge Ibaka. I think
it was even worse than that, because they retraded Kurt Thomas sometime later to San Antonio for another first round pick. And Kurt Thomas was making $8 million. He was not making $27 million. And that was back when the tax was dollar for dollar. So, yes, you know, they saved some money, but they turned taking on $8 million in salary.
They turned it into
three first round picks.
Yes.
That's all. We don't need to go and do it more than that. I'm just saying. Yes. It's a different time. Not everybody was totally an asset.
I believe in different moves, the Suns traded the picks that became Lou Alding, Rajon Rondo, and Serge Ibaka, I believe.
Yeah, and I think in the case of Rondo, I think they just, didn't they sell the pick?
I believe so, yes.
They just, here, $3 million, here. And I think it was like the 15th pick or something like that. It was outside the lottery, but it wasn't. What's that?
Matt Ishbia would never.
Well, nobody, I don't think the league would allow it anymore.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this. More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket. With Vivid Seat Rewards, score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Anyway, all right. So real quick, we talked about the top of the West the other day, but I just, as we as we get down here, I just wanted to take a look at, spend a couple minutes here taking a look at the Western Conference race for first place and where some of the tiebreakers and stuff come out. So I know that you've paid close attention to OKC, McMahon. They are, as we do this, are a half game ahead of Denver.
With the tiebreaker. I attended the one time this year that OKC lost to the Nuggets, and it was by a whole bunch of points, but they won that series 3-1, including an SGA buzzer beater in Denver. So OKC has a slight edge in the standings and the tiebreaker there.
Okay. And Denver and Minnesota, who are 2-3, in addition to Minnesota dealing with Karl Towns injury, they play three more times. Minnesota is up 1-0 in that, but they play three more times, and it's going to be without Towns. And
by the way, Denver's already projected to have two more wins in Minnesota as it is. And Minnesota's going to be weakened down the stretch here.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very, 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 very tough for the Timberwolves to finish above third. It's just
real question
reality.
The real question is, you know, we talked about New Orleans the other day, where some people in New Orleans got very mad for me saying that they haven't been talked about on the national radar since the in-season tournament. When we spent half the pod talking about them, somehow that turned into us not talking about them. But be that as it may, I think there's
a thin skin.
Oh, I just thought it was funny that just this one clip in a half an hour pod got pulled out as us not talking about New Orleans at all. And the podcast was literally headlined about the Pelicans being the hottest team in the league. But I think there might be a better chance, frankly, of Minnesota finishing fifth behind New Orleans than finishing first or second. because they're not going to have Towns down the stretch here. There's currently a 4-win gap in the projections that doesn't include Towns being out. And, you know, if you look at, you know, if you look at how this is going to shake out, I mean, I think it's much more likely that Minnesota slides some than it is they go on some crazy rampage here and finish first or second. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I think that'd be a, I don't know that they're going to slide that much, but I guess stranger things have happened. Hopefully
it's only four losses. Well, it's not that much.
Hopefully our pal Gobert doesn't get teed up in critical situations in the final minutes of games and then double down afterwards.
Well, and by the way, like these two games they just lost over the weekend, like the Cavs were very banged up. I know they were missing Towns, but still, second half back-to-back, but still, you lose that game, you lose to the Lakers. We'll see what happens tonight with this Clippers game. Like, those are tough games to lose if you're in the situation they're in and you're trying to maintain your standing. You can't be giving away games against anybody that you quote-unquote should be beating because it's just going to make your life that much more difficult.
There's a reason why Denver is projected to be in better shape. Denver has the easiest schedule left amongst all these teams. They have three games left against the Spurs. They have two games left against the Grizzlies. They get to play the Jazz and the Blazers. They really, they have one game left against the Clippers. That's the only team outside Minnesota that, you know, they're completed with everybody else. So I can totally see why Denver, you know, you don't have to have the computations to figure out why Denver is up there.
And by the way, unlike last March when they sort of took their foot off the gas and got into cruise control, we spent several weeks talking about, you know, how good are the Nuggets and are they going to be able to make a run in the playoffs? This year feels like the inverse, where they've gotten to this point, they saw a top seed in sight and were said, we better put our foot down and let's go get it and make sure we have it, even if they won't admit it. And, you know, like we talked about the other day, if you're sitting there as a team like the Lakers and this is a pretty massive thing where it's like, well, maybe we could get the Thunder, who we match up really well with in a 1-8 matchup, if we actually can get to the playoffs, which is a whole other question. Or we could get Denver, who we match up horribly with and has now won 8 straight games against us. And, you know, if you're the Lakers and you play Denver in the first round, I'm sure there'll be discussions about, can the Lakers win the series? They're not winning the series.
Maybe there should be discussions about, can they win a game?
Well, sure. Okay. But my point is, until we see them win a playoff
game against these Nuggets, that's where the discussions on this podcast.
It's a good place to start.
Obviously. But my point is just that this, for a 1-2 situation, which is looks like this is going to come down to, it's got a lot higher stakes than it even normally would, because you're going to see, like, there's some certain matchups there that could really be beneficial to some of these lower seeded teams. And it could be either really good or really bad, depending on who's sitting there.
Well, and look, if Oklahoma City is the number one seed, if they're able to earn that, again, they do have the tiebreaker and the Nuggets are number two. I'm sure you could find statistical nerdy models that would say, hey, 7-8 game, you'd be better off losing that game as far as the probabilities to get out of the first round. Now, there's no way you would take that risk. I just cannot imagine, because you don't want to put yourself in a win or go home situation. But again, all due respect to Oklahoma City, if I'm buying stock for 5 years, that's probably the first place that I'm going. But nobody in their right mind would rather see the Nuggets and the Thunder in the first round.
Well, the Thunder have the hardest of these teams. The Thunder have the hardest schedule left. They play Boston. They have two games with Milwaukee.
Got at least one with New Orleans.
They have New Orleans. They have Phoenix. So it's not, Denver's got the easiest and the Thunder have the toughest, and they're a half game separated. We'll call it a full game because of the tiebreak. It doesn't have to be any kind of collapse for Oklahoma City to not get the one seed. Denver could just flat out win it outright just because of the strength of schedule situation. But, you know, it is interesting if you're, you know, because at ESPN, everything's got a Laker angle, you know, that you would be quote unquote rewarded potentially by being in the 9-10 as opposed to being in the 7-8, assuming that play in victories, which, you know, you shouldn't assume. But
well, by the way, on the lines of the seeding, just because there's literally just an update that came over. Stephen Curry had a good evaluation and is going to be reevaluated after Friday's practice. So he's going to miss Wednesday's game against Dallas. And there's at least a chance then, because their next game is, I believe, on Saturday, which I'm checking, Saturday against the Lakers, which is a pretty massive game for both teams. I would guess there's at least a chance that he will be back for that game on Saturday. So, you know, as we continue to talk about how close all these matchups are and how these, in particular, these head-to-head games matter in terms of swinging things, that obviously would be a massive swing for the Warriors if they can get Steph back on the court for that game against LA on Saturday.
Yeah, the Warriors statement certainly indicates a little bit of optimism that he can come back Saturday. He says he's been cleared to resume on-court workouts in the Bay Area and is expected to join the team for practice in LA on Friday. Then he'll be reevaluated. So not
only seems like he'll be back Saturday, barring setbacks.
Seems like a reasonable hope.
Yeah. And you, is the first game is tonight in Dallas?
Nope.
Wednesday.
Well, tonight, depending on
tonight for the pod,
people on the podcast. Yes.
Yes.
Right. Our tonight.
Look at you. Not look at you tonight. Zooming into the future.
All right. All right. Well, so thus concludes another spectacular podcast with McMahon and Bontemps. Thank you to Jackson for producing it all. Thank you to Bontemps for being salty. And thank you to McMahon for being McMahon. And thank you for listening. We'll talk to you guys very soon.
Adios, amigos.